Again, we are reading in Prabhupada's books, as we will read many times if we read Prabhupada's books, which I hope you're all doing. Is it? We're all reading Prabhupada's books. Din Bandhu Bhik Pratyao. He's reading? Maybe he doesn't know how to read, though. Anyway, you can chant Hare Krishna. So we're reading how impersonalism is rejected. Absolute is sentient, thou hast proved. Impersonal calamity thou hast removed. Prabhupada wrote this eulogy of his own spiritual master, which Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur appreciated very much. That impersonal calamity thou hast removed. Impersonalism is a calamity, a disaster, whichever way you want to call it. It's nothing auspicious. So we're reading this again and again. This is the central point of Vaishnava philosophy, to understand that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and we are all his servants. But impersonalism destroys that idea. In many ways, the Vaishnava philosophy and impersonal philosophy, there are many similarities. Up to the Prabhupada wrote that up to the point of liberation, we agree with the impersonals. We agree that human life is meant for God realization. We achieve this human form of life after many births. That we are spirit soul, we are not the body. We agree that the Vedas, Vedic knowledge, that should be followed. There's so many points. Culturally also, we believe in the system of Guru Parampara, in worshipping cows, worshipping deities, worshipping Ganga. There's so many points on which we agree. Up to the Vedic culture is accepted both by impersonalists and by devotees, with some differences within, even among Vaishnavas, what to speak of amongst different sampradayas. Even within the same sampradaya, there are differences in details. But up to the point of liberation, we agree, but then there's a big difference, because what is the meaning of liberation? Bhagavatam gives the definition. Muktir idvamita rupa sarupena vyavastiti. That liberation is defined in the Srimad Bhagavatam as to be situated in one's swarup, in one's own form. Which gives a very different idea to the impersonalists who say arupa, no form. Their idea is when you become liberated, you don't have any form. But Bhagavatam defines moksha, mukti, as to attain one's actual form. And Bhagavatam, that is the definitive literature among all the Vedic literatures. There are many different things said in the Vedas. And Bhagavatam is definitive. This Jiva Goswami has proved in his Tattva Sandarbha. All the Vedic literatures are there. How to understand them? Because you'll find is what the impersonalists say. In one Purana or one part of the scripture, Shiva's established as supreme. In another place, Devi is established as supreme. In another place, Indra. In another place, Krishna. So according to the impersonalists, you can take whichever deity you like and you can take as supreme, because all the different Puranas, different parts of Vedic literature, they all mention different gods as being supreme. So then they say they're all supreme. And when you say all supreme, that means no one's supreme. So we're all supreme. We're all supreme. We're all the same. Brahmaiva bhavati was stated in the Upanishads. Brahma labdha brahmaiva bhavati. When you come to the spiritual platform, you become Brahma. You become spiritual. Or they think this means you become God. You become supreme. Because Brahma means supreme. So the Upanishads say you become Brahma. So, yes, that we accept, but everything has to be understood in context. If it's all simply, well, ultimately you take whatever you like, you take from the Shastras you like, and it's just open to your interpretation, then the question comes in, why have any Shastra anyway? And that's what you get in the modern degeneration of impersonalism. Prabhupada notes that impersonalism, as given by Shankaracharya, is bad enough. But even Shankaracharya would be disgusted, Prabhupada wrote, at what's going on in the name of the people calling themselves his followers in the modern day, even he was not, what he was preaching was nothing as degraded as what's going on in the modern age, where there's no people without any reference to at least Shankaracharya. He was following Shastra, not following, but he was purporting to follow Shastra. But modern impersonalists, they don't even care for any Shastra. Just anyone comes in and calls himself God and okay, he's God. So many strange things going on in the name of religion. Now this is the ultimate, this is what it comes to. If you say that, well, you can take any opinion from any Shastra as you like, then the question comes, why follow any Shastra anyway? If you have Shastra but ultimately depends on your opinion, then your opinion becomes more than Shastra. So then you get all kinds of things like this Osho, and just they take a little something concocted from something from Shastra, mix it up with something they read in the newspaper and something they gummed up in their mind, and it comes out, have sex as much as you like. This is the way to get liberated. Have sex. That's it. Realization. I had a realization. This is my realization. That's the pig's realization. Pig is not a big philosopher. He's not studying Socrates, Upanishads. He's just making some nasty noise and having sex. Doesn't need any Shastra. That's why Prabhupada said, dogs and cats don't need Freud. This Sigmund Freud, big philosophy, which comes down to all our problems are because we have sexual inhibitions. So now they introduce sex education in the schools to teach the children how to have sex and don't be inhibited. They're teaching here too in the home studies course. They showed me the syllabus. All the nice, polite Gujarati girls are going and learning about birth control and abortion and sex and so many things. Prabhupada said, you don't. For so many years, there's no sex education. Still, enough children are being produced. You don't. The dogs and cats, they don't have to go to school to learn about sex. It's by the gift of the super soul that natural attraction is there. You, without anyone having to explain, you realize what you have to do. Of course, there's also part of the Vedic Shastra, Kama Sutra, which describes techniques for, if you're going to have sex at all, well, how to do it in such a way that your kamana, your material desire, your sexual desire is more fulfilled. But there's a purpose behind that also. Because sex life, according to Vedic understanding, it's not said that there's no pleasure. The materialistic people, that is their pleasure. So the pleasure is there, but that's meant for producing children. Sometimes, several times I've been asked, it was in teachings of Lord Chaitanya, it said that Shankaracharya, one of his reasons that he taught as he did was to increase the population of demons. So people ask, well, how is that? How is impersonalism increasing the population? How is that? You see, they're complaining, too much population. Actually, Prabhupada said there's no such thing as too much population. The earth can support 10 times the present population, or even more. You see, the population of Dwarka, even that King Nagnajit, when his daughter Nagnajiti was taken by Krishna. So even if you see the number of servants he gave his dowry, not to speak of the elephants, horses, chariots, and everything else. It says that he gave so many horses and then 100 times more elephants and then 100 times more chariots. And so if you see what the number of servants, it comes to, I think it's more than the present population of the world. And they were just in one palace in Dwarka. So Krishna, he can support any number of people. There's no shortage. Even now, what's the overpopulation? Why do they say overpopulation? There's not enough food. There's plenty of food for everyone. If there's not enough food, then stop growing tobacco and coffee and useless things like this, which are no value to anyone. Stop growing these things and produce grain. Stop growing food for meat. How many pounds of grain is required to make? It depends, it's different. I think it's like 20 kilos of grain produces 1 kilo of beef. So stop having beef cattle. You can just let the cows previously. Still, that's going on in India. They don't. In the West, they keep fields. They cultivate specially for growing crops for the animals. Not here also, but mostly they feed here and there in the forests. You see, Krishna is taking the cows in the forests. Forests are also required, not that they should all be cut. So there's enough by Krishna's arrangement that we follow the natural plan. There's no shortage. The land can produce much more. So they're complaining about overpopulation. We also say overpopulation. Why overpopulation? Because they're all demons. Otherwise, if they're devotees, everything will be very nice. We don't mind if there's more population. But if people are performing sinful activities, that's called overpopulation. Even one is too many. But if all devotees, very nice. So Shankaracharya came to increase the population. How is that? Because his teachings, they're so uninteresting. What is the ultimate goal? They say material life is miserable and the goal is to merge into the one in the one. It means practically it's the same as shunyava, to become nothing. The goal is what? The goal is just to stop all these activities and become nothing. Merge into the light. So who wants to do that? Who will want to follow such a process where the ultimate goal is, if you're frustrated, then people commit suicide. So it's spiritual suicide. Impersonalism means spiritual suicide because you want to stop existing practically. Although physical suicide doesn't stop your existence, nor does the spiritual suicide of impersonalism stop your existence. But it's almost like that. You become numb. Stunned. Not in ecstasy, but stunned out, like paralysis. Some kind of mental paralysis. So that's the goal, and how to attain it. Simply, just like we say, bhakti is kevala ananda kanda. A path is simply joyful. And in personalism, it is abhyatta-satta-cetasam. It is simply full of difficulty. Performing many austerities, not allowed to laugh or sing, or very dry. So the goal is not desirable, and the method to attain it is also not desirable, and it's also very difficult to attain. Even if you are very austere and very learned in Vedanta Sutra and all these things, still it's very difficult to attain in personal liberation. So who will want to follow such a path? And then what happens? People think, well, forget it. I'll just have material. There's no enjoyment either in the process or the goal of impersonalism. So they say, but everyone wants enjoyment. So they may say, well, this material world is miserable, but at least there's some kind of enjoyment. So they go back to material enjoyment. That I was in Thailand for some time. I used to ask the people that. In Thailand, the motto of the people is Sanuk. Thai word, Sanuk means pleasure, material pleasure. So the most important thing in Thailand is Sanuk, how to enjoy. Everyone knows who goes to Thailand. People go from all over the world to Thailand to enjoy. It's a very strong enjoying mood. You can't imagine, because in India, it's different atmosphere. Even if people try to enjoy gross sense gratification, they can't. Even in the West, it's better atmosphere for gross sense gratification. In India, people get frustrated very quickly. In the West, they get frustrated also, like anything. But a lot of time, they don't connect it. They're absolutely frustrated and suffering from tension, but they never connect it with their whole goal of life and their mode of life. They just think, I have to go and see a psychoanalyst, and then he can put a few screws straight here, and then I can go on enjoying material life. It's Marlon Brando. You haven't heard of him. Jagat Purush has heard of him. He's a famous actor in the West, something like Amitabh Bachchan or something in India. Very famous actor. So he said that this acting, it's a bum's job. He said, what did I get out of acting so many years? Just enough money to pay my psychiatrist bills, that's all. At least he's honest. He earns so much money that he spends it all on the psychiatrist because it drives you crazy. Most people, they don't realize that. It's simply frustrating. Anyway, I was talking about Thailand. So the illusion of enjoyment is very strong. People think, Sanuk, everything's very nice, everything's very enjoyable. According to astrologers, the country that Venus, Shukra, is very strong, enjoying. Anyone has strong Venus means, oh, they're a big enjoyer. And anyone has strong Shani, it means even if you try to enjoy, you can't enjoy. That's good for sadhus. Probably if you look at most of our brahmachari's hands, you'll find Shani is very strong. You can't enjoy. Nor are you very much inclined to. It's good for destroying material enjoyment, and it's good for renunciation to have that strong in your hand. Anyway, I was asking people in Thailand, according to your Buddhist philosophy, that all this enjoyment, it will simply lead to rebirth, especially the four things they're very interested in Thailand. Number one, illicit sex. Very much interested. Then intoxication, gambling and meat eating. These are four things which in Thailand are very popular, even more than other places. Especially illicit sex. There, prostitute is not considered bad. If a girl's a prostitute, it's considered quite respectable, quite normal. And there are many of them. That's why people go from the West. They're cheap. So I was asking people, why you'll get reborn as you're eating pigs, you'll get reborn as a pig. And they say, well, that's also one kind of sanuk. It's also one kind of enjoyment. What's the harm? Pig's also happy. Actually, pig is happy. Prabhupada explained. A pig is fat, that means he's enjoying. Who becomes fat, that generally means they're enjoying. They're eating nicely and they're feeling very jolly. See the pigs going, the tail is fresh stool every morning. What a wonderful life. You see, every morning we get fresh stool. You can't get such fresh food. Just fresh, hot. Newly produced every morning. Oh, wonderful. And then, see, there's so much. You read in the Bhagavatam how the residents of Vrindavan, when they had a festival, they'll throw butter and milk and yogurt on each other. They have so much excess food. So the hogs also, there's so much stool, they can not only eat it, but they can go in the drain and it covers all their body. And it's wonderful. What a wonderful life being a hog. So they're feeling happy. Of course, anyone who's more elevated, they'll see that this is not happiness. This is miserable. But Maya is so strong, you're thinking, it's happy. This is happy land. Even Indra was cursed to become a pig. What a curse. Now you're the king of heaven. Such a respectable position, you have to become a pig. And he wouldn't come out of that position. He was attached. When the time of the curse was over, okay, come and be Indra. No, I want to be a pig. This is wonderful. What's the use of being king of heaven? I have so many nice children, we all eat stool together, we all have sex together. Family life. All the pigs, very happy. So Maya is so strong, they're thinking they're happy. So that's the result of impersonalism. The people, people lose their taste for understanding God, for understanding real spiritual life, which is they don't have information of the happiness of bhakti, of Krishna consciousness. They don't have any information, or even if they have information, they think that bhakti is not very high class. So the natural result, when impersonalism is preached, then people they become grossly materialistic, and then the population will increase, despite their abortions. They have so much abortions and birth control, and still the population is increasing. So in all ways, even materially, this Mayavad is most inauspicious. Even materially means that people become sinful. So they have to go to hell. Even just by the by nature, Mayavad is sinful. Mayavadi Krishna Aparadi, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said. Mayavadi is there, but from the very beginning they're offensive to Krishna. Even sometimes they may appear to praise Krishna. They'll say, oh, you'll find so many, mostly all the Mayavadis, they praise Krishna, isn't it? They say, well, you're the great philosopher, you're the great leader, or something they'll say like this. He's a god, I'm also a god. And they'll say, he's an avatar. Then they'll say, Sai Baba's also an avatar. So it sounds as if they're praising, but they're not praising. It's just like, I gave this example last night, if you say, Atal Bihari Vajpayee, he's a great person. So that's praise. But then if you say, just like this Rickshaw Wala, he's just great like him. So is it a praise or an insult? It's, if you're saying he's great, but then if you say he's great just like the local Rickshaw Wala, it's not a praise, it's actually an insult. So if you say Krishna is a great philosopher, just like Gandhi was a great philosopher, or Osho was a great philosopher, it's not praise, it's an insult. You don't know who Krishna is. People, they don't know. Mayavad means you don't know who is supreme, because you say it's all the same. So Krishna consciousness, it's opposed. All the Vaishnava acharyas, they oppose Mayavad. He hated it. Advaishta sarva bhutanam, Krishna says in Gita. Maitra karama eva cha. Krishna says, don't hate anyone. Be friendly and kind to everyone. So our friendliness and kindness to the Mayavadis is, Prabhupada would say, kick them in the face with boots. This is our kindness, friendliness. Don't accept this philosophy. Because we don't hate anyone. Someone may be a Mayavadi, we don't hate them personally. But this philosophy, it's most... what's the word? Jaganya, horrible. Devotees, they become... if a devotee does not become upset on hearing this, then he's not actually a devotee. If you love someone and someone insults, then you become upset. So if you hear Mayavad and you say, oh, that's okay, that's very nice, then you're not a devotee at all. Devotee means he has to be against Mayavad. Sometimes people say this, Krishna bhaktas, we're very extreme or fundamental, but we can't accept. If anyone's going to say Krishna is an ordinary person, or drag him down, or say, make some, appoint some imitation God, we're not going to accept, can't accept that. For our Vaishnava preaching is very much against impersonalism. Now here, in this part of Bhagavatam, there is some impersonalism being recommended in Bhagavatam. But that is not this envious impersonalism, that is just how we can see God manifested everywhere. Just like if you see the rivers, now in this season you'll see the rivers very high in the canals, full of water. So you see the river, you think the river is just like Krishna's veins. You see the mountains, in this part of Gujarat there's not much. If you go to Saurashtra, you'll find. Anyone here from Saurashtra? So you'll find there's some, you're from Saurashtra. But you're in the city, so you don't see. But there are some hills. Not very big hills, but some hills. So when you see the hills that is described here, the mountains and hills, they're like the stacks of the bones, that's described. I think that's just like the bones. You see the ocean. What is that described? That's like the seminar of the Lord, is it? Oh, and here it's described as his waist, in different places described as different thing, according to the... So when you see all these things, we can think of Krishna. In Gita also Krishna describes like this, that I am the tasting water. If you see the light of the sun and the moon, you think this is a representation of Krishna. So that's one way of seeing Krishna, as the material cosmos, as the impersonal representation of Krishna. But that's not to deny the person who is behind all this. Devotee sees Krishna everywhere. When you see anything in nature, you immediately can understand how wonderful is Krishna. Now it's very popular in India, they have this Discovery Channel. They have an animals channel, cable, I think it's cable TV, is it? People like, as they watch, they see all different things in nature. These people go out with their cameras and they catch the photos of different animals breeding and catching other animals for food, and it's very cute, you know, they see the animals, little baby bears playing with each other. But a devotee sees in all this, behind this is Krishna. It's not going on by chance. A devotee sees everywhere Krishna. When you see the chapati being cooked, you should understand that how is this possible by Krishna? Otherwise, how is it that this certain grain has to be ground in a certain way, and husked and mixed with just the right amount of water and rolled and put on a flame at just the right temperature, then you get a nice chapati and you eat it. How is that all by chance? Even to make a chapati, you have to do it just nicely. If you put too much water, if you see nowadays people, they learn from cookbooks. Their mothers don't teach them because their mothers don't know. Anyway, their mothers are busy working. So people learn how to cook from cookbooks. So if you read in the cookbook that you have to mix atta with water and then you get chapati, so you think instead of mixing 1 kilo of atta with a little bit of water, why don't you just take one little bit of atta and more water, because it's cheaper. It's also atta and water. So why don't we put, just like in the milk, they're selling milk, they put more water, you get more money, because you're selling, it's more water than milk. So if you think we'll save money, we'll put a little bit of atta and 10 times more water, and you won't get chapati. There's a system. That's what you have to do. Just the right amount of water. Then you can do it. So how is this all by chance? So many nice foods, they're made by cooking. How is it all by chance? That the spices, different seeds, mostly spices are seeds. No, there's so many different things. Dalchini, cinnamon, the bark of a tree, then you get your tej pata. They don't use much in Gujarat, they use curry pata. That's leaf. So all these different things, how they give flavors, and you can combine them to make different flavors. And some food, just like some vegetables, they increase too much air in the body. So you have to put a certain spice with that, and that will counteract. You don't know. The ladies, they used to know all these things. Your mother knows. The Gujaratis, Gujarati ladies, they know all this. Which spices you have to mix with which vegetables, and if you have any illness, Prabhupada said this also. He said that by any illness, you can treat by diet only. You don't have to take medicine. If you know that just by diet, you can treat it. So how is it if you get dysentery? Can you imagine what's the cure for dysentery? You should take hot eggplant, fried in ghee. Hot with puri, you eat that, you'll stop dysentery. How is it possible? If you take cold eggplant fried in ghee, you'll get 50 times worse dysentery. If you take it absolutely hot, then it cures it. So how is it, all these different things, how is it possible simply by chance that there are so many diseases, there are so many cures, there are so many things, baby culture, you God, by design. How is it the child, any mammal, dog, cat, human, the baby, when they're born, the mother, human mother, will put the child to the breast, or the dog, or the cat, or the pig, they'll just come underneath. How do they know? They didn't go to school to find out that, how do they know to go to the breast, or the teat, or the other of the mother to take milk? How do they know? There's no chance for them to study Darwin's theory. How is it possible? By chance. How is it possible? They're being prompted from within by the super soul. There is your food. Sarvasya chaham vidhi sangha vishto matasmati jnanam apohanam cha. From Krishna comes knowledge, that the baby has the knowledge that here is my food. You have to suck. What do they have to do? They have to move their mouth. Something like this, and then the milk will come out. How do they know? They don't know anything. There's a young baby of any species, including humans, absolutely ignorant, but they know how to take the milk. But apohanam, they're also forgetful, they don't remember their previous life, but they're given knowledge, just what they need. How is that? Devotee, of course the atheist, they'll argue with twisting their tongue this way, that way and the other. But a devotee understands it's possible by Krishna. God is behind everything. So a devotee sees God everywhere. This first step in God realization is describing how to see God everywhere. How to see by His effects, by nature, how He's everywhere. Hare Krishna. Any question? Brahman realization is described in Shastra as being many more times than that of material happiness. And the bliss of Krishna Bhakti is like a great ocean. That's from Hari Bhakti Sudha Dhai, that verse Chaitanya Mahaprabhu quoted there. That's like a great ocean compared with which Brahman realization is like Goshta Padam, the water in the footprint of a car. So Brahman realization is that for those who have merged into Brahman, or for those who are in this life, well, if you say in this life experiencing it, that means they're experiencing it. Shukadeva Goswami described that I was already fixed in the happiness of Brahman. He was Jivan Mukta. He was already Brahman realized, but when he heard Bhagavatam, he was attracted. So he was Atmaram. He described in relation to himself that he is Atmaram. He is already situated in Brahman happiness. That's why he didn't care. Anyone, the children, calling him names and throwing stones at him, he didn't care at all. Because he was at Brahmasu, Brahman realization. But when he got the happiness of Krishna consciousness, he became attracted to God. So it is something which rarely people may achieve in this lifetime. So the Kumaras also, another example. They were Brahman realized, but they became God realized after them.
Is it also
Is that same bliss there? Is bliss there? Well, we don't usually call it bliss. Devotees consider that hellish. But as far as the devotee is concerned, material life is hellish, and Sayujya Mukti, that's also hellish, because without an opportunity to serve Krishna, where's the bliss? So it may be from the impersonalist point of view it's bliss, just like from the materialist point of view, material happiness is bliss. But actually it's suffering. They're thinking it's enjoyment, but actually, just like we're saying, the pig, they're thinking it's enjoyment, but the one who's in a more elevated position, they can understand that actually it's not bliss at all, it's suffering. There's some sensation, there is some interaction of the senses with the sense objects, which gives a sensation, and they mistake that sensation to be happiness. But actually, because there's no understanding of Krishna, because the background on going on alongside this sensation of interaction of the senses with the sense objects, concomitant with that as the effects of lust, greed, anger, anxiety, and so many things. So that's going on, and in the midst of this lust, greed, anger, which the materialist is bombarded with, then there's some sensation of rubbing of one skin against another, or whatever it is. So they take that to be the normal situation, that we're full of lust, greed, anger, envy, illusion, all these things which cause suffering. So in the midst of all that, if there's a little rubbing of one skin against another, or some sensation by intoxication, the lust, greed, anger, it just gets altered a little bit, and they consider that to be happiness. So that's what they consider to be happiness. Now one who's an impersonalist, they can understand actually it is not happiness. So their happiness is the relief of getting relieved from the gross effects of lust, greed, anger, and all these anxieties and so many things. But from the devotee's point of view, that's just another kind of misery, because he still doesn't know Krishna. So it may be bliss for the impersonalist, but as far as the devotee is concerned, Kaivalyam Narakayate. You know this verse? Tridashapur Akasha Pushpayate. That the bliss of merging into the oneness, it's just, as far as the devotee is concerned, it's just another kind of hell, that's all. And as far as material happiness, going to the heavenly planets, it's just a phantasmagoria. It's all meaningless. The real thing is Krishna Bhakti. That's real happiness. Yeah, go on, let's take it further.
What loses
the
sense of individual separate existence in this
liberation?
How can you
experience bliss? Good question. It's the bliss of, like I say, the bliss of relief. It's just like the bliss of going to sleep. If you wake up and say, I slept very nicely. There's some sensation, other you must have experienced. While you were sleeping, you must have had some sensation, otherwise you couldn't say when you wake up, I slept very deeply, I slept very nicely. So what is that? It's a sensation of non-sensation. Something is there, because the living being is by nature is conscious. So he's some consciousness is there of being unconscious.
He used to be sleeping consciousness.
Sleeping consciousness?
Before we used to say something, and he is sleeping consciousness.
Actually, that's stated in the Upanishads that when you go into deep sleep, that's going into Brahman. Sometimes we make a joke. The devotee is merged in Brahman. While chanting his rounds, gets merged in Brahman. Actually, the Upanishads say that. Because the question comes that, well, where do you go? What happens to the soul if there's no consciousness? So the answer is that actually the soul is still existing in Brahman. He doesn't cease to be conscious. So it's something like going to sleep. Jeev jago, jeev jago. Utishta, jagata, prapya varangri bodhita. Wake up, get up, wake up. Get that thing, attain that thing for which you are meant. Hare Krishna.